up, let's keep it real, son. Count this money, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, yo, put the
this song goes out to Tom Cody.
You know what I'm saying? Because we spinning these Jacksons. The Washington's
Watch, the white, throw the white.
I'll take it.
You don't need to know who that is. That's okay. I got Tom and Lex here with me. This is the Sunday Puncher Podcast. I'm the host. I'm Angelo. We are back to our regularly scheduled schedule, I guess. You know, boxing seems to be back. We're about to get in the swing of things. We're about to go week after week after week of fights. And so after, you know, we took like, I don't know if we call it a break, but, you know, we were just a little irregular with our schedule. Well, looks like we're back. And guys, we had a real nice card last night on Showtime. We had a cool little showbox card on Wednesday night that I guess maybe we'll squeeze in a couple lines on. We saw Conor McGregor get beat up. And so let's start. We have the Showtime card from last night. As the Chiefs score yet again, looking like they are stamping their way into their second straight Super Bowl. Stephen Fulton, he won a very wide unanimous decision in what was a really gritty fight. A fight that I certainly didn't expect. He beat Angelo Leo, took his WBO 122-pound title. So I want to ask you guys this question. Did you expect Fulton to win in this fashion?
I really didn't know coming in. I viewed it as really a 50-50 fight, and both guys had enough gaps in their resume that it could either have been some version of Leo steamrolling Fulton or Fulton really taking over. I mean, the way I'll color this, I did the media call earlier in the week, and like Leo, his tone was like this was the fight of his life. He was prepared to go to war. He was going to grit down his mouthpiece and do anything. And Fulton's attitude was, I'm a superstar. I'm going to beat him up. This is going to be my breakout fight. You know, and I think both of them ended up being correct. But I think it was a pleasant outcome. Not really surprised, but I'm very happy with how it turned out. Great fight. Lex?
Yeah, I guess the outcome didn't shock me. You know, when I saw him fight Kagai, like, I felt Kagai was, like, trying to hurt him and not in a boxing way. Like, I remember that fight being pretty dirty and, like, a lot of, like, sketchy tactics being used. And I never felt that Fulton folded under the pressure of someone fighting, like, cheap. So I didn't think that he'd wilt under Leo's pressure. My question was his stamina. And, like, he in round 12, he looked like it was round one. I mean, his gas tank has to be amongst, you know, at the top of the boxing game. So I wasn't too shocked with the outcome. I was rooting for Leo a little bit, but not shocked at all.
What I'll say is that I was really, really, really not expecting Fulton to win the way he did. In fact, I thought he'd lose. You know, I came in and I would generally say that I was wrong about everything in this fight. And you know, I pride myself on usually having a really good read on the way a fight is going to go. Even if I get the outcome wrong, I'll get, you know, some part of things right. But I didn't expect this at all. I didn't think highly of Fulton coming into the fight. I thought the fight with Kagai exposed a lot more about him in a bad way than it did in a good way. You know, you can see guys go get into fights and they face adversity. And it leads you to be a little optimistic about them because either they've seen a particular style or they've reacted in a way from the adversity that leads you to believe that they're going to grow. And I didn't really get that sense from Fulton, coupled with the stuff I'd seen from him in the past. And I know everything that they had said about him in terms of, like, he's beaten all these undefeated fighters, blah, blah, blah. Well, so what? And he answered a lot of questions about himself in this fight. Like, I really saw a guy put everything on display. And I was impressed about so many things. I saw him fight on the inside. And while I thought, which was crazy, because everybody thought that he was going to outbox Leo from the outside, and that's what they thought Fulton was, just like counterpuncher. I never thought that that's what he was. So I guess I was right about his ability, like his style. But he performed well on the outside, well enough. But I actually thought he performed way better on the inside. what we saw, like, I felt like Leo's downfall was that he just physically did not have the strength to be able to work on the inside. Like, Fulton was pushing him all over the ring, like, not letting him take a single small step back to get leverage on his shots on the inside. And Leo just really struggled to put punches together because of how physical Fulton was with him. We saw Fulton be fast in the ring. That, like, his speed is very good for his division. And a lot of guys at 122 are fast. He showed chin. He showed heart. Leo had him hurt in that fight. And Fulton smiled, bit down, and he kept coming. I mean, he showed ring intelligence. He was able to adjust. He was able to move back and forth between the styles when it made sense. And you mentioned the stamina as well, Lex. The stamina was great. So literally everything I expected in this fight was wrong about Fulton. And that makes me more impressed, obviously, if I'm comparing what I thought versus how it went. But, like, I'm more impressed by what I saw because of that. I thought Fulton just turned in a great performance here. Let me ask you guys this question. You know, everyone talked before the fight about Fulton's resume. Everyone talked before the fight about the fact that Fulton had fought so many undefeated fighters, blah, 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 blah. Okay? But let me ask you guys this. To you, does Stephen Fulton now, with this win over Angelo Leo, does he have the best resume at 122 pounds?
I think he does. I mean, the division is so strange in that you had Vargas. It was, you know, really fractured and no one was really fighting each other. No promoter was taking it seriously, basically. You sort of had Daniel Roman had kind of lost earlier, had a few wins. You had Ray Vargas, who is probably the consensus number one.
Is that me? What happened?
I'm good. You tripping over?
Anyway.
Keep going, Tom.
Yeah, so, you know, you had these different sort of fractured versions of it no one was taking seriously. Daniel Roman then kind of started to emerge as the best guy, and then he lost a close fight to Akhmed Aliyev, but it was close, so it's a pretty open division. I think most boxing writers, you know, and I say that basically as a pejorative, the sort of nerdy boxing writers we usually make fun of have Akhmed Aliyev number one. But it's funny, BoxRec's algorithm has Fulton like the clear number one in the division and Akhmed Aliyev number nine. So it's funny how it lays out like that. I mean, I have no problem whatsoever making him number one. And I think what's exciting is in a year from now, I think we'll have a more clear number one. I mean, I'll maybe get more into this in a little bit, but in some ways, this performance reminded me of J-Rock against Herd.
Interesting.
And we know how J-Rock's career went from here. I mean, you mentioned Fulton was hurt a little bit. He had been knocked down earlier in his career. That was why I thought there was a chance he could get steamrolled. So, I think this could be a division like 154 where guys end up beating each other. So it'll be kind of exciting to find out. But I think Fulton is either number two or number one, I think, if you're sort of the two parallel lines of thinking. And
well, not
I have absolutely
ranking,
no problem
just
having
we'll talk
one.
About ranking, but like sure. Resume-wise.
So I have a question. Like,
it's the one thing. I'll just answer the direct question. I mean, to me, it's the same thing because Akhmed Aliyev's either number one from beating Roman as just the best single win, but Fulton has strung together you know, a bunch of solid wins. So it's kind of the same thing. Do you like a few solid wins or Akhmed Aliyev with probably the single best name, but it was a close fight? Like I said, I'm fine to go with Fulton in that way. But anyway, Lex, your thoughts?
No, I was just going to ask, who are we picking between here? Like, if you're talking about best resume at the division, it's between what?
Let me just jump in. The other key point was Ray Vargas moved out of the division. So he would be the other guy who would have a claim, and he left the division.
Well,
but anyway, sorry.
Yeah, because we're not going to play that game that some people play where somebody has stated their intention to leave a division or they've actually left the division and still keep them in there because we're not the ring or
yeah,
any
the
other
ring, I mean,
completely biased outlet
the ring's
like that.
Rain emoji rankings, yes, but which are completely idiotic.
Let me just lay out the case here. So, or not the case, but let's look at the details here. So Stephen Fulton has Arnold Kagai, who you mentioned, who was an undefeated fighter, And I thought Kagai did pretty well in the fight. It was, I thought that was a competitive fight, even if the cards didn't refer to the fight, or the cards didn't really reflect that. Isaac Avalar was undefeated when they fought, but I don't know. We'll see what Avalar becomes in his career, but from what we saw in that fight, he didn't look very good. Adam Lopez has proven that he's a very gritty contender, and Josh Greer, he's a guy. You know, I don't know what we call him. I don't even know if I would consider Josh Greer like a contender level opponent, but when you add all of these guys up, that does look, or and now Angelo Leo is a former world champion, this does add up to be a very good resume, especially for a guy who, like Stephen Fulton, has really just graduated from his from prospect level. Those are a lot of really good wins, and like a lot of prospects out there don't have wins like this on their resume. We could talk about any prospect you want to go down the list. None of them have a resume that stacks up like this. Luis Neri has two great wins over a former bantamweight champion in Shinsuke Yamanaka, who was a fantastic fighter. And I think the win over Aaron Alameda is definitely a good win. I think Alameda looks like he's got some skills that we don't frequently see at 122. Then there's Ahmed Aliyev, who, as you mentioned, he had a pretty tight win over Danny Roman. I don't rank this that highly, although still the win definitely counts up there. It's a, you know, it was a world champion in Danny Roman that Ahmed Aliyev beat, but I don't think that Danny Roman was just amazing fighter that people think. I think this win, that win, was just as good as the Leo win for Fulton. So just kind of looking at all those guys side by side, I don't really think anyone else has an argument there.
One more note on Ahmed Aliyev. I know I'm interrupting, but it's like, if you look at his record outside of the Roman fight, I mean, he's really fought just absolute bums.
Well, no, he's fought prospect guys. Fights,
they have 34 losses. In you know, it's like, I mean, his ledger is just full of opponents just with like red markings on BoxRec, you know, like tons of losses in their last five fights leading up to fighting him. I mean, it's really like, it's crazy he even got the Roman fight. You know, he's an example of a guy who gets completely just judged on his amateur record instead of his pro accomplishments. But anyway, back to you.
And it was, you know, the fight with Roman was competitive. I know that the commentary was extremely biased towards Ahmed Aliyev, but it was a very competitive fight.
Yeah, it was, well, it was a split decision for one. And well, I mean, all the cards were 115, 113. It was just, you know, two one way and one the other.
Yeah, so I thought, you know, I would say that Ahmed Aliyev, it's between Ahmed Aliyev and Fulton for the best resume, but I think I'll go with the depth over the and I think the Roman win is leveled out by the Leo win, in my opinion, which gives Fulton the edge because he fought better opposition as a prospect coming up. But now, you know, I think I know what you guys are going to say, but like, well, then who's the best guy at 122? And we do have a division that looks like it's shaping up to be very 154-esque, with you have Fulton, Neri, Alameda. I think Alameda deserves to be mentioned here. You have Figueroa. You have Ahmed Aliyev. You have Castro. You have Iwasa. There's a long list of guys at 122. PBC has the majority of them on their side, where we expect easy mix and match between these fighters. But like, of all these guys, who do you think is the one that, while they, and we'll even, we'll say it this way, who's the guy that walks out as the best guy in the, who's the Jermell Charlo right now? And they may not be the guy who's obviously number one or has a title right now, but who becomes a Jermell Charlo at 122? Oh, and I forgot to mention Aleem too.
Well, you keep saying Alameda. Who are you talking
about? No, I mean Alameda. Aaron Alameda, I think, deserves to be in this on this list. I thought that while it was a dull fight, I think he showed against Neri that he belongs on any list where we're talking about the top guys at 122. But Aleem, certainly, we need to mention, and we're going to talk a lot about Aleem in a bit, but like, who do you see as the guy who's left standing at 122?
Lex?
I mean, I feel like you got to give it to Fulton right now. I mean, he's had a pretty impressive run of wins. They're also notable wins. I mean, a lot of people don't recall that he beat what's the kid that was coming in with the pillow?
That's Josh Greer. Yeah, yeah.
A while back. But yeah, I mean, yeah. He's only 3-0, but that still matters in my book. So, you know, right now I think Fulton is a guy that's like being hunted. and MJ because he has all the belts, but I didn't like that MJ and Ramon fight. I wasn't that like impressed with either guy's performance. Fulton was way more impressive to me last night, and so I'd go with Fulton.
What do you think, Tom?
I just think it's too soon to tell, and that's one of the reasons I like the division. I mean, just to give the short version of this, it's like I thought Neary was just going to be the best guy. Like, I thought he was just in a pound-for-pound sense, like, by far better than everyone else. His last fight was difficult. Like, you might be right that Alameda is just maybe better than we think. But that put some doubt in my mind. And meanwhile, Fulton, who was a guy who, again, looked talented, but, you know, looked like he might be flawed. And, I mean, again, you know, I'm liking the J-Rock comparison because, you know, outside of a knockout loss in his record, I mean, it just kind of reminds me of J-Rock coming up. I mean, they're both Philly guys. They both will flash some talent in spots, but don't necessarily seem to be able to, like, physically take over fights. Like, Fulton doesn't have that many knockouts. It's a similar thing. J-Rock would be a guy who would fight some guys coming up where it seemed like fights that he should have gotten knockouts and didn't.
I'll say this about the J-Rock thing, though.
Yeah.
J-Rock at one point, I think it was the Demetrius, no, it was the Antoine Douglas fight where we, at least to me, I saw that J-Rock was, he got like downgraded pretty significantly in my book. Cause at that point, J-Rock was a blue chip prospect. And with that fight, that the Douglas fight, that certainly made me think that we had a guy who was the next tier below the B tier level prospect with J-Rock. And I haven't seen that with Fulton, even though I didn't think that he did that well against Arnold Kagai. It wasn't to that level where it shook my confidence in Fulton. Also, yeah, my confidence was a little lower in Fulton than it was in J-Rock.
No, that's a great point, and that's kind of exactly the point I mean. Like,
shout
there was
out Showbox,
a period,
by the way, testing those guys early.
Where, well, and in addition to Showbox, there was a period on the Golden Boy on, I think they were called Golden Boy on Fox Sports Net. You know, it was basically the precursor of the PBC FS1 cards back when Heyman's guys were.
Oh, I thought
Golden
you were talking
Boy, where
about
like,
the 2010 version of that.
Well, it was like 2014. I don't know.
The Toe to Toe Tuesday.
When it was like, on so many of those cards, you'd have like J-Rock, the Charlo twins, and like Spence.
And then Victor Ortiz in the headliner.
Stuff like that. Or like Luis Ortiz headlined one of those cards. And like Spence would always just destroy his opponent. Usually Jermall would as well. And then like Jermell would like box to a comfortable win, but still like shut his guys out. And then J-Rock, like, sometimes, you know, it was like he sometimes looked like he was going to be okay, but sometimes, like you said, would have these sort of more questionable ones. And I'm trying to think, who was the middleweight prospect from the 2012 Olympics who just lost to Lubin? Gaucher was another guy who was sort of like maybe slightly worse than J-Rock. And it's sort of funny how that prospect stuff ends up like kind of showing in their professional outcomes. But anyway, I'm sort of, you know, that's enough talk down memory lane about that. But I mean, Fulton, I think as far as who's going to emerge as the guy, just a quick thought on that. It's like, that's why it's exciting. Like, could be Fulton. We just haven't seen enough of the Waters mix. Like, Fulton might end up just being better than everyone else. And like the fights with the other guys looks like the fight that he had with Leo tonight. Could be Neary, where he is, again, just kind of better than everyone else. He's with that great, you know, AAA camp right now with the Reynosos. Could end up being Akhmadaliev. Like, it might end up being that Roman and Akhmadaliev were the two best guys, and Akhmadaliev gutted it out. And
well,
he might
get that.
He has the amateur resume. He might, you know, he might end up improving as he has more fights. Like
we
said,
just saw Roman struggle with Juan Carlos Payano.
So that leads me
to believe it might be Gary Antonio Russell.
Yeah. well, he's a,
it's a joke,
right,
guys.
Now.
Come on.
But no, I'm going to say just on pure emotion, it feels right now like it's Fulton. Fulton feels like he's the best guy. J-Rock felt like he might be the best guy at 154 after he fought hurt. That's the point
not true at all. Maybe you felt that way.
No, I I'm saying that's the fun thing. I think we're just going to have a lot of good fight. Like, this is not a division again. Like, I always use Spence as the example of just like the best prospect where like he just looked as good he could in every outing. Like, you know, I don't think this is a thing where we're going to have a guy like that who takes over. I think this is going to be like more like 154 where we just have lots of good fights, more than one super dominant guy. And I'm totally happy with that.
And that would kind of be on par with the lighter weight classes where you see guys mix it up and they don't always go undefeated because of the volatility of the division. Weight cuts, I think, really matter at this level. And I think to me, in terms of like, who have I seen where their performances looked a little off the page? And this performance from Fulton is one of them. And I think Akhmadaliev showed some things in his fight that were a little off the page, but on the whole, it wasn't like the best performance, but we can also chalk that up to like, hey, Roman was a good fighter that he was in against. I think it's between those two, certainly. But let's just say like, you know, going forward, let's say over the next 6 to 8 months, we're coming up with the game plan for Fulton's career. And there's a lot of juicy matchups at 122 that we could see, that you could envision him in. Which one intrigued the most between like Aleem, who won on the co-main, Danny Roman, Brandon Figueroa, Luis Neri? We'll also forget that some fights are rumored to be happening. Which of the fights at 122? And let's also be realistic. So the Akhmadaliev fight is probably not realistic. I don't think that easily happens. So what matchup to you would you stake your hat on and say, this is the one we're going for?
Well, just clarify, as far as what's going to be the best fight or the possible, like, two best guys?
No, it's one guy you're targeting.
If you're Fulton?
Yep.
Lex, go.
I suppose Neri, no? Because he's the WBC, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't go after Neri, but I could have swore I saw on Twitter, Roman said that he's getting the winner of Leo and Fulton. I might be tripping, so don't take that too. Did you guys see that or no?
I didn't see that. Wouldn't hate it, but I didn't see it.
I'm going to jump on his Twitter right now just to double check that. But
well, while you're doing that, I can jump in. I would be interested to hear an answer to that because it's nice to know what's been like kind of reported already.
Well,
but
he was chirping on Twitter last night. I just don't know if he said that he was getting the winner.
Yeah, I would love the Roman fight because it's a chance for, you know, just again, I get too caught up with like the Ring Magazine rating idiots, but maybe I'm being too harsh. I don't know. Am I being too harsh on the Ring Magazine people? But anyway,
I don't give a fuck about them.
Because that's a chance for Fulton to elevate. I mean, Roman to me is still like a class guy. That was a close fight.
I guess you could say it's a measuring stick fight.
Yeah, I think it would be a good fight. And I'm also just saying this, it's impossible to ignore. I mean, it's been so widely reported that Neri's going to fight Brandon Figueroa. So I'm just sort of tabling those guys. I'm always the guy who likes to see a little bit more of like a tournament bracket play out. I'm not the guy who says, who do we think are the top one and two right now, have them fight. If there's like, you know, if those guys haven't fought 3, 4, 5, 6, let's see some of those fights first and then, you know, build up to the climax. So to me, I would be very happy to see a Daniel Roman fight. Aleem, again, we just saw tonight. I definitely wouldn't complain if we saw that fight as well. I mean, that's a very different look from Haggai or Leo. So could definitely... I would say the two that I would really like would be Aleem, which is so natural fighting on the same card, or Roman.
I think for me, the answer is Neri. And I think Fulton would beat Neri and it wouldn't be close. But I think that that's the fight that makes a lot of sense. I think whether it happens now or in 6 months, 8 months time, it'll be a unification on some level and potentially for three of the titles at 122 and not just the WBC and the WBO. I think it could be a really interesting fight too, because Neri showed in the Alameda fight that he can box. He's not just his power puncher, and you know, Neri's like famously got one of the highest knockout percentages in all of boxing, blah, blah, blah. Saw no sign of that power at 122, which is kind of odd for somebody who's just switched to the Reynoso camp. So I personally think that that is the best fight. I think Fulton, if Neary wants to box, I think Fulton's got him there. And if he wants to fight on the inside, we just saw that Angelo Leo, who is a very good inside fighter, we saw him get taken to school by Fulton on the inside. I'm curious if Neary were to go that route, how he would fare against Stephen Fulton. But I do want to see Aleem as like second place. Like I think that that fight would be a super high skill affair. Anything else on the main event from last night, guys?
So I found this tweet real quick.
All right, what did he say?
There is still unfinished business with MJ and would love the rematch. Although I am Lewis Neary's mandatory, he has decided to go a different direction and fight Figueroa, but the fight with Neary will happen. So it was Neary, not Fulton.
Okay.
And as far as just one more thing to add, I mean, a couple other names at 122. There was a lot of chatter online today. I mean, way more than I expected from Michael Conlon. He originally thought he was going to get a chance at the 122-pound WBO title that Fulton has. And he and a lot of other MTK accounts, and there were a lot of like retweets between these accounts.
A lot of bots.
We're talking about... Say that again?
A lot of bots.
Oh, no, I don't even mean that. I just mean, you know, like Carl Frampton was like tweeting about it as well. And, you know, yeah. So, I mean, Carl. So one thing that Lex and I were talking about before was like, what are we even supposed to think about that? Because it seems so unlikely that that fight would happen.
It'll go to a purse bid.
Yeah, and like Fulton is not like a super well, but only if he's his mandatory, right? Otherwise, he doesn't have anything to say about it. So Conlon would have to get into that position first.
I think that they're going to put him in that position because he was due for a title shot at 126, and then he dropped down to 122, and the WBO's got like weird rules about giving people opportunities if they have them or if they're in position already in other divisions. So I would not be shocked at all if the WBO made him the mandatory for Fulton's title. Wouldn't be smart, but...
Well, that's the thing. Like, how do we feel about that? Because in my mind, Fulton would be, I keep saying, like, maybe a 5-1 favorite. Like, a pretty substantial favorite. I mean, if you talk about, like, Fulton not looking as good as like, you know, a Spence level prospect, it's like he never looked as bad as Conlon. I mean, Conlon has looked so bad in his fights and has not succeeded in stepping up at all. I just that to me is such a head scratcher, and especially weird to see him so vocally calling out Fulton, because Fulton, I mean, this card's going to do less than 200,000 viewers on Showtime. I mean, it got completely swamped by the coverage of the UFC card. Like, I don't, it's so weird, you know, it's not really clout chasing. I don't get that at all.
Well, I think
so. Is the master plan to win a purse bid, and then he thinks if he can do the fight in Ireland, like he'll win a corrupt decision? Like, I don't
scale back sometimes on the reaction from what you see on Twitter, because that frequently does not line up with the reality of, you know, the box level stuff of boxing. And so people, you know, Conlon's obviously connected with MTK and being Irish with some fighters over there. And British boxing Twitter tends to be pretty vocal, but I don't read much into it. I think if the fight were to happen, doesn't matter who is going to televise it, who's going to promote it. Fulton easily beats Conlon. Conlon is not very good, and they know that he's not very good. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Bob Arum was willing to just send Conlon over to do the job because he knows he can't really do much with him. Conlon's fate will be much like Conor McGregor's in that if he can keep talking, he'll stay relevant, but it won't be on the back of his actual in-ring accomplishments.
Yeah, that's maybe not a bad way to look at it if we, you know, think of other guys in that sphere like Billy Joe Saunders. A lot of talk and not a lot of actual fights.
But
so,
don't count out the WBO making an interim WBO title for Top Rank, and just,
well, that would be hilarious.
Running because, with two titles, I mean, like the WBA does it. If they did it, I wouldn't even be mad. I'd be
I mean, the Paco Varcarcel. I'm sure I didn't say his last name correctly. I'll just call him Paco. WBO Paco. on Twitter is always crapping on the other sanctioning bodies when they do interims or regular, like the WBO or the WBC and the WBA, for having like regular titles and interim titles. And, you know, we have our own complaints about the WBO because they basically just put titles on whoever Top Rank wants. But that is, you know, that's been their claim to integrity, is that they don't do that. So that would be quite strange and unprecedented for them. But this is sort of on, you know, this is another just sort of footnote to this, is like a bit of the intrigue of the fight. I mean, this is the rare PBC WBO title. And, you know, we were talking in the chat today. I mean, there had been a plan, like Top Rank had literally laid it out on one of those cards, that Castro was supposed to fight. Now I'm forgetting the name of the fighter. Castro was supposed to fight someone else, and then the winner for the vacant title, and then the winner of that was going to fight Conlon. But then Fulton Leo was named for the title instead, since they had properly fought into the eliminator slot. They have this pressure from the Austin Trout lawsuit. They granted it to the PBC guys. So you have this weird situation where Top Rank doesn't control their own title at that weight class. So anyway,
it could be a situation where maybe, well, one WBO with their lawsuit with Austin Trout may need to keep a title over with PBC just to have some deniability. But then the other thing is that Top Rank may just punt the division and realize that Conlon is not the guy. A lot of their 122-pound guys have either moved up or can move up, and therefore they stake a claim on 126 and campaign there, and just let PBC and whoever else wants, let them fight over the 122-pound division.
Yeah, well, we'll find out. I mean, Top Rank is sort of on ice for right now.
Because
so
Conlon
not...
ain't the guy to do it. That's one thing I know for sure. Ain't the guy.
Yeah. Right. I mean, Castro seems to be their best guy in that division. So, you know, we'll see what happens there.
All right. Well, on the undercard, we had Rais Aleem. He stopped the underground sensation, Vic Pacias, and what was a pretty good fight. I think it had a couple
momentum
shifts.
You just did it
again. Oh, my God.
I don't Sorry, know I know was, I said I was going to do it in the chat, but
I wasn't
just
going to say anything.
There may be, guys, I don't know if this will make it to the recording, but my microphone seems to be doing this little beeping thing. And yeah, sorry. I'll get a new mic and we'll sort this out. But for the meantime, we're going to just keep rolling here. So yeah, Rais Aleem, he stopped Vic Pacias on the undercard. I thought it was a really good fight. Let me start by asking you guys this question before we actually talk about the fight. Is Rais Aleem like the best flying under the radar fighter out there in all of boxing? Like no following, no sort of hype. There was nothing to his name. He just randomly pops up on that. I think it was the first actual PBC card returning from the pandemic, and he beat Marcus Bates. Comes out of nowhere, looked very good in that fight. He comes in here, Vic Pacias, heralded. Everyone loved his performance against Ranfis Encarnacion, who was undefeated on FS1. And Aleem came out here and just like really showed there's a gap between the two of them. So what do you guys think? Is this guy the best flying under the radar fighter out there? Can you even think of any guys that would even compare to him?
Lex.
I can't really think of anyone that's as under the radar as he is. I mean, the fight really confused me because against Marcus Bates, I wasn't really impressed. And then when Vic Pacias fought, Encarnacion?
Yeah.
He looked outrageous. He looked so good. So I was thinking, like, I mean, the odds are pretty close, like, come fight time. And I was like, all right, like, maybe it'll be close, but Vic Pacias should pull it out in the end. It was so one-sided. Like, this guy was throwing a lot of awkward, like, confusing combos. I don't like the hyperbole, but some of his shots reminded me of, like, Pacquiao a little bit. I don't know. I don't like to say that. So let me bring it back in. But, yeah, man, he looked really good. So super under the radar. I'm super excited to see his next fight. Nasty performance. I feel bad for Vic Pacias. It seems like he overcame a lot to, like, completely get smoked. I hope he gets another shot. Don't know if he will, but.
What about you, Tom?
Yeah, I mean it's always a hard question to phrase. Is he the most like? There's no one else who really immediately comes to mind. But yeah, like you guys were saying, it was weird. You know, I went back. I was super looking forward to this card, so I was watching a bunch of stuff, and I went back and watched the Marcus Bates fight, and he had also fought actually on Showbox in February. So he fought twice. He was one of the rare fighters to get two good fights in 2020. So, yeah, and it was sort of about the same thing. Like, you know, on the official scorecards, he won every round against Bates and got a TKO. But it's like when you actually go back and watch it was like he, again, didn't look like a sensational talent. And it was a TKO because Bates hurt his wrist. So it wasn't like a crazy knockout. Like, there was sort of a good highlight clip at the end where, like, Bates turns away and Aleem lands a shot right into the camera. So it's sort of, if you just sort of watch the highlight clip, it sort of gives a distorted picture of what happened in the fight. But yeah, and again, contrast it with Aleem, who just looked like an, you know, absolute superstar, has this crazy amateur record. It's like, you know, whatever it is, like 300 amateur wins or something, and has beaten a bunch of, like, you know, current titleists and title challengers. And yeah, again, just, I mean, it's a reminder that, you know, amateurs is not the same thing as the pros. And if you outclass, you know, a very lower level opponent, that doesn't speak to how you're going to do on once you step up. But I mean, this speaks to the same thing when we were trying to rank 122. It was such a fractured division before. Like, at 147, so many of the fighters have fought each other, or, you know, it's like, you have, like, you can sort of play 6 degrees of separation. You know, like Ugas knocked out Ray Robinson, who got robbed against Mean Machine. You know, you can sort of play that game, but so few of these guys have been in with each other at 122. It's so hard to get a point of comparison. I mean, again, it's like perfect example of this, that Casillas looked unbelievable in his last fight against an undefeated fighter. This fighter fought it this time, fought another undefeated fighter, another orthodox guy, almost the same height and reach. You know, on paper, it seems like a similar type of fight, and then it's Casillas gets outclassed to the same extent that he had outclassed his opponent in the prior fight. I mean, I want to give Casillas a little bit more credit. I mean, he still showed, you know, the talent that he has. He landed a fair amount of good shots and counters in the fight, gave Aleem a black eye. And really, kind of the biggest headline with Casillas is just absolutely no punch resistance. You know, when Aleem would land a good hard shot, Casillas would go down. You know, in the main event, Fulton would land a good hard shot, and you could tell it hurt Leo, but or Leo, but he didn't go down. So, you know, that's part of the story too. Anyway, we can get on to the next tick here.
Real quick, while we're on the topic of this card, a few people in the Patreon were saying how good the broadcast was. And like, I don't know, I don't think that was in the notes, but I do want to mention it. It feels great to watch a fight and not be weighed down by listening to like random Twitter boxing takes or like random arguments about completely unrelated things. And I don't know, I just want to like give props to, you know, they bought in
I
Raul
disagree
Marquez.
with
That
that.
was
I think
dope.
Al Bernstein is getting to be on my nerves and
Oh, no. Al Bernstein is getting bad. I 100% agree, but yesterday's
he don't got the
card was
fastball
good.
anymore. I'm just gonna say that.
Well, you know, here's the thing, right? I think you have a lot of people in boxing media having fun on boxing Twitter, and it like ruins your professional opinions because he started his own podcast. He's interviewing people. He wants clickbait material, and so he starting to entertain boxing Twitter debates, and then he brings it to the broadcast, and it's like we're not watching to hear you talk about like a bunch of things that aren't going to happen. Let's focus on like Aleem's backstory, Casillas's backstory, the action in the ring. I thought yesterday was good. I like Marquez. Ronaldo always brings it. Bernstein's slipping a little bit, but I
No,
enjoyed
not a little
yesterday.
bit. I
A
don't
lot of
I
bit.
don't
No, a
care.
lot of bit for sure.
I don't care. I don't You guys can be super thrilled about Al Bernstein, but I'm sorry guys, that dude's lost his fastball. He don't got it no more. Okay?
Yeah,
I love him.
I don't have a super strong opinion about it. I mean, I liked the broadcast. I mean, technically, as opposed to some networks that can't even like handle that. And I like the commentary. I mean, I like Raul Marquez. I would like to see him be, you know, if he's going to continue to be on the main, you know, he's always been good on Showbox. or he's been on Showbox for a long time, but I'd like to see him be a little bit more assertive. I mean, he's the actual like pro. I'd say the technical analysis from the rest of the crew on Showbox is actually fairly good compared to some of the other, you know, like Broadcast with Brian Kenny, where he just has nothing to say of value about the technical side of it. And for the most part, that's true on the Top Rank as well. I mean, you know, for the color guy, you know, the former fighters there, Bradley and Ward, do their own thing. But, I'd like to see Marquez be a little bit more assertive. But for the most part, I think they did a good job. And really, the most important thing for me on the broadcast that stood out is, you know, they're broadcasting from an empty arena. You know, I want to hear them bring enough emotion into it that you can get into the fight and not feel like you're just watching guys in an empty room.
I feel like they
did that. I feel like they mostly succeeded at that. I mean, they were, you know, it was like the main event got off to a blistering pace like right from the first punch, and it felt like it took them like two rounds to realize that it was as good of a fight as it was. But yeah, for the most part, I was happy with it. I have nothing more to say about that.
I don't think Marquez is any better than Abner Mares. I think they're roughly the same. The broadcast is enjoyable, so I'll say that. But I do think Al Bernstein is starting to grate on me. I feel like I used to always agree with his general takes, and I'm starting to see that maybe he's really not seeing the same thing that I'm seeing, and I feel like that is not good. But to get back to the question, because, the broadcast was fine, not enough for me to actually point it out, not too good, not too bad, it was just right. But Raiz Aleem, in terms of being a guy who's flying under the radar, the reason why I put this here is because this guy is an anomaly, and you got to realize that you're seeing something that you're not going to see that much anymore. This is like a guy in wrestling who's come up through the territories. Like, that is no longer a thing. You don't see that because the territories are dead. We are in an era now where it is hard to be good and not find yourself tied up with somewhere. Everyone is tied up. You have guys that are turning pro and signing with major promoters. You are having guys whose all of their fights are being televised. You got high schoolers like Vito Melnecki fighting on TV, okay? Everyone, there's an arms race for talent. Everyone is getting scooped up. And you know what? A lot of these guys who we've seen on TV, they're not that good. We just saw one of the Barrientos twins who there was a little bit of fanfare about these guys turning pro. Well, one of them got knocked out. We've seen enough prospects. You know, we've seen Eddie Hearn, who signed those three prospects, and two of them are now, you know, one's a taxi driver and the other one's flipping burgers. I don't know. But they are gone from the pro scene, and I don't know if they're coming back.
And what do you mean? Your boy Abibi is still killing out there.
he should probably stop killing and start learning to box, because he's going to find himself also working another job very soon if he don't, you know, improve. But Aleem's a 30-year-old guy who looks legitimately really talented, who's just coming off of two very impressive wins. These are two prospect-level wins, even though he's 30. I would consider them prospect-level wins that place him. Those are two wins that are better than probably 90% of the prospects in all of boxing right now. He's now a legitimate world title contender, should get a shot in his next fight or the one right after. And we had never heard from him. We had never heard of this guy. And this is going to become, if things stay the same, very rare for a guy to fall through the cracks and for us not to know who they are. So I just want to shout out to, you know, them finding this guy. And I hope that this gives people hope, anybody who's out there grinding, and I'm like 99% sure you're not listening to this podcast, but like for any fighters out there who aren't signed with one of the big promoters that don't align themselves with somebody who's got a TV deal, that at some point your day still can come. And it looks like it's come for Aleem. And like, would you guys be shocked if Aleem wound up running the gauntlet at 122 and beating everybody from what you've seen thus far?
No,
it wouldn't be shocking. Now I don't think that's going to happen. But I wouldn't be shocked if he did beat all of these guys, because we did see some things. So anyway,
he's very much a dark horse to be the guy. I mean, I'd say out of all the recent performances in this weight division, he has one of the most aesthetically pleasing performances. It looked great. Now, you know, we could question what Casillas had left, but he still got it done. And Casillas had a little left in the later rounds. I think maybe in the seventh or eighth round. Pacias
actually had a little, like, a second wind, I thought, but it didn't last very long.
Seventh or eighth round. He hurt Aleem. I don't want to say badly, but I was like, wait, he's about to drop him. And like, Aleem knocked him down, like, the next round. But
yeah, there was a clear momentum shift in the fight, I thought, where Pacias looked like maybe Aleem had such a blistering pace early in that fight. Then he started to fall off. His punch output seemed to drop. And the punches didn't look like they had the effect that they had earlier. And Pacias started to open up. I think he started throwing the straight left and kept landing it. And then Aleem was like, oh, you thought? And then fight was over. So anyway.
So just a question. Do you think Aleem's resume at this point with these three televised wins in a row is, how does it compare to Shakur Stevenson's best wins?
Well, Tom, if you want to say that you hate Shakur Stevenson, you're more than welcome to just say that.
Look, if you think Shakur Stevenson's
Stevenson ain't shit, just say Shakur Stevenson ain't shit.
If you want to defend,
if you want to say Shakur Stevenson's got a silver medal or whatever the fuck he's got from the Olympics, and that's the only thing that he's earned thus far as a fighter, go ahead and say that.
Wait, let me offer a take on Shakur, because I see the problem.
We're talking about Ra'is Aleem, 122-pound contender. And Tom is over here, just wants to drag us into just allowing him to slander the good name
of
Shakur Stevenson.
Let me phrase that another way. This is supposed to be quick hits. The other one I was going to say is Billy Joe Saunders, in terms of Billy Joe Saunders' best wins. How does this stack up to that?
Well, let's ask this another way. No. This is hard, Tom.
Okay, this is getting off
topic.
I'm just going to explain the point that I mean, because you raised a great point, Angelo. There are so many fighters, who have a name for some reason, but really just don't have, maybe have one decent win, and then just nothing else. You know, how many fighters are there like that?
And I
just,
again, Jr.
I'm just going to speak to the broad point. I'm not going to get
Shakur Stevenson is what you're trying to say. But maybe Shakur, like, you can make an argument Shakur don't have it yet. But go on.
Well, that's the point. He doesn't even have one signature win.
Yeah.
Right. I mean.
Correct.
So that's kind
Chris
of
Diaz,
my point.
Baby.
Well, I think the bigger issue, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like, with so many available dates.
Mm-hmm.
People are picking and choosing, and they're trying to like create narratives with guys that they want to be in the spotlight. Like, Top Rank wants Shakur to be in the spotlight, and Shakur probably isn't ready, and that's cool. He'll get there. And now Aleem, he like, however he got to television, he got there, and he's looked amazing. And it's like, you have to wonder, like, who the narrative is being designed for. Eddie Hearn is doing a lot of work to get BJS a Canelo fight, I think. And it's like, he doesn't need that TV time. You have this guy, Aleem, who should have it, but he doesn't get it because he's not like a chosen one.
I mean, that's ultimately the point I'm trying to make, that we have so many fighters who, you know, think of like Crawford's last few years. You know, he's blowing out guys who are outside of the top 10, and you say, oh, well, he beat guys outside of the top 10, top 15 or whatever. He did it impressively. So therefore, he's number two at 147. You know, I like seeing just substantial wins, just rack these up. You know, Fulton,
yeah,
you know, I know we were talking about Aleem, but I mean, Fulton is a guy who just, you know, it's like, this thing is like a sixth undefeated guy. He's building up some substance in the guys he's beating. A guy even like Chris Colbert, again, it's like they're bringing up these guys in terms of trying to develop stars in a different way, where they're fighting guys who are coming there to win, who are, you know, they have these, you know, undefeated or, you know, one loss opponents. But again, guys who are fresh, who are trying to win the fight, and they're, you know, getting good wins over them. They're not picking and choosing guys over outside of the top 100 for Shakur to knock out, or outside the top 30 for him to get decision wins over. You know, I mean, these are real substantive performances. Anyway, I maybe went about it the wrong way, but that was the point I was trying to get to.
All right, so guys, listeners, here's what you take away from that. Tom hates Shakur Stevenson, and it's okay. You can hate whoever you want, all right? It's totally fine. Tom just chooses to hate Shakur Stevenson, even though Tom is famous for a Shakur Stevenson gif, but we'll leave it at that.
Hey, don't hate the player, hate the game. That's all I have to say. I said what I said, and we can move on.
Okay. So what do you think should be next for him?
Shakur?
No, we'll leave. I'm gonna answer quick. I'm just gonna get this out quick and then not talk anymore about these guys. anyone we've seen on Showtime in these 122 pound fights, I think Aleem has proven himself to be a valid title challenger. I wouldn't mind seeing him against any of these losses, because even the guys who have lost these fights, I thought were good fights. You know, like Tremaine Williams, who lost to Angelo Leo. Mm-hmm. I think he's owed another fight potentially. You know, he was a late replacement to go in against Angelo Leo. He was originally supposed to fight Aleem, I believe.
What a fight that would have been.
Yeah, I really want to see these guys at 122 mix and match like the PBC has been doing at 154. I mean, I'm a broken record with that, but I'd take any of the winners or any of the losers of these recent fights, because there have been so many guys who have shown themselves to be class.
Yeah, I actually would like to see him fight Stephen Fulton. I think if I'm Aleem, I think that is a great fight for me. It's a high risk because obviously, you know, if he loses, you go from the high of beating a guy like Pacias and then you lose to Stephen Fulton. Or Akhmadaliev isn't a bad fight for him either. And I think they're both winnable fights. Like I said earlier, if, you know, in 2 years' time, we realize that Aleem was the best guy out of all of these guys, no one's going to be shocked. And so I definitely think, though, that Aleem's ready for a world title shot. I think he deserves it at this point. He's got the wins now. These two wins over Bates and Pacias are like the highest level showbox style sink or swim contender fights that you could possibly have. And so I think that's the best path forward for him. I think there's also a little bit of momentum possibly that's building with him. And you definitely want to build on that. Let's talk about Rolly now. He was supposed to...
I have one more thing on 122.
All right, be quick.
This is the... Yeah. Is this... these 122-pound fights, as much as we're talking about that we like them, is this Showtime's version of the Superfly fights on HBO? And by that, I mean critically praised, but the lowest-rated cards in the history of HBO boxing. Is there a chance that this could catch something? Or is this just going to be people like us... you know, kind of boxing nerds who think these fights are fun.
So like the high level sort of, or not, no, the more granular answer is no. I think these cards, albeit low rated, will still perform better than Showbox. But at the same time, if we're comparing them to the PBC, like standard Showtime Championship boxing level cards, there might be some truth in that. I do think that these are not going to be rated very high. And I think, Lex, we might have talked about this in the past, but you asked about, like, could 122 catch on? Can these fights catch on as, like, on their own and stand alone? And I said, no, I don't think so. I think they'll stay the way that they are, which is not too popular, with the exception being things will flip when we get a star. And I don't know if that star is in the division right now. I don't know if it's Fulton, but... it's not until we get a star. And like, for those of you who are going to try to say, well, it's somebody at 118 who moves up, I don't think so. It's got to be somebody like Donaire. If you guys remember, Donaire really caught on at 122 when he was on HBO. That was lightning in a bottle. That is what we're looking at here. Oh, also Abner Mares. Abner Mares really caught on when he was at 122. Until we can get a rivalry that pops up like that just organically and two fighters with that level of popularity, I think the floor for 122 is still going to be pretty low.
Yeah, what about you, Lex? Do you think anyone can emerge here as like a real star, real ticket seller, or are these just
it's
going to be
because,
sort of,
you know, I was thinking that Pacias might be the guy, but watching the
you guys
reaction.
Are out of control. I seen too many of you guys with these crazy takes on Pacias. Like, what were you guys thinking?
No, listen. My thing is this, right?
You guys are impressed with beating Ranfis or Encarnacion, a guy who had like never fought outside of the Dominican Republic?
I look at everything through marketing goggles, okay? I was watching a bunch of Pacias, Ellie Sekbak interviews from like 8 years ago. And this guy has all these stories about how he grew up in East L.A. and was selling drugs. And it's like that kind of story brings people in. People don't show people show up for the story and they stay if you're good. I think that's how the saying goes. To see his story was amazing. It's just that he's a little washed. Now, I still would like to see him fight, but
how you but without, washed with and you said, have like 18 fights?
Because he's had serious drug abuse problems. I mean, he's a lot of demons. Yeah, I think you know.
Yeah, he's been in and out of the ring.
His body's drug been addiction through a issues. Lot.
So, but I still would want to watch him. But anyway, I think
he wasn't washed. He didn't keep his hands up. That's a guy who's a lot of talent and no.
Yeah, but if you stayed busy and stayed in the ring and you don't do drugs, you might be have a little bit better punch resistance.
Or
might
be a little bit quicker. These dudes did a lot of drugs. Like they were doing coke. Like before every sparring
session. They were doing drugs during the fight, though. It's a little different.
All right, Tony Harris, relax.
No, but wait. Fulton, I think the hip hop, like a lot of rappers, a lot of NBA players got behind Fulton after last night. Freeway mentioned him in his story. Steven Jackson mentioned him in his story. Gilly the Kid, Rallo, Caleb Plant,
who's
Broner. You had a lot of people get behind Fulton. So if he could rack up a couple wins, I mean, I'm not sure how big of a star he could be, but I think you'd have a little something.
The question is, will he be bigger than Shakur Stevenson?
I mean, probably not. Shakur's on.
I'm not taking like the bait here, but no. I just want to like move us along. We're eating up all the time in the podcast, but it's like, yeah, I agree. I mean, just to sort of come at from where you're coming, Lex. I think like the first guy that made me think something actually, who showed me something in that way, was Fulton with this win. This is the first performance out of this group of 122 that Showtime has been putting together that has seemed to actually like break through.
I'm going to tell you guys right now. If Brandon Figueroa beats Luis Neri, that might be the guy.
Well, and I would say Neri too. Like there are a bunch of guys and these guys are all undefeated. You know, I mean, Neri, I would have thought, except for his last fight, could be a guy who's just comes in and maybe even knocks these other guys out.
Well,
you know,
there's still potential.
He had a new camp. He might have been trying to box a little bit more. You know, we'll see. But that's like you're saying. It's like in terms of star potential, like Brandon Figueroa is like, you know, mini Ryan Garcia potential. And I, you know, mini both in lower weight class. And, you know, I'm not being that hyperbolic about it. Neri, again, has a lot of potential upside. Fulton, definitely. I mean, Aleem even. I mean, and these guys are all undefeated. So, I mean, Aleem less so just because he's older. But, you know, I just can't wait to see these play out. I mean, like I said, I have a hunch it's going to be like 154 where they're going to be trading losses. But, you know, we'll see who breaks out of this.
All right. Well, a guy who does actually have, like, on paper star power is Rolando Romero. Rolly Forrest. He was supposed to fight Justin Pauldo. Pauldo didn't realize that it was a lightweight fight, so he showed up for a 140-pound fight. And Rolly said, screw it, I'll fight you anyway. Just, you know, try to, like, lose a little bit of weight. And the doctors were like, no, actually, Pauldo, there's something wrong here, I guess. So the doctors...
Well, I listened to a Rolly's interpretation of what happened was he agreed to fight at 140, and the other Pauldo said that he was pissing blood, and the doctors wouldn't let him fight because of that.
Oh, well, good thing that fight didn't happen. I hope Pauldo's all right. Because if you'd have gotten the ring with Rolly, the walking clenched fist, he probably would have gotten very, very, very hurt. But anyway,
who was
Avery
it that
Sparrow,
said that? Because that's really like, was that was during the broadcast?
Yeah, that was
right?
Al Bernstein.
Yeah, that's a great
line. I believe
it
was Al Bernstein. It was a really good line. So he fought Avery Sparrow, who you guys may remember from a potential fight with Ryan Garcia, where U.S. Marshals apprehended him in Target and took him away. So he fought Rolly here. Rolly dropped him. Rolly forced the corner to stop the fight. The only thing I want to ask here, guys, is do you guys think Rolly looks like he's improving?
I'll go. I thought, I mean, this is such a, I really don't want to spend a lot of time on this one. It's just unfortunate. Sparrow had been paid to be a backup opponent. And, you know, Teddy Atlas was, of all people, was crapping on this fight, which is just idiotic. Look, we're in the middle of a pandemic. He was paid to be a backup opponent. He looked like, despite that, he really didn't prepare. Like, he didn't look in shape. He looked like he was looking for a way out. Like, he at one point looked like he had a knee injury, but who knows if that was a real injury at multiple points. At one point, his mouthpiece did come out at multiple points. He looked like he was trying to spit out his mouthpiece or kind of hold it loose so it would get knocked out. So it was just kind of a mess. But having said all that, I mean, Raleigh looked like he was determined to box a little bit more. He actually did box quite well. I mean, I know, you know, you always take CompuBox with a grain of salt, but he landed 50% of his power punches. You know, like, he's a caveman, he's a meme fighter, but he looked like he was trying to do something a little bit more disciplined this fight, and I don't think Sparrow gave him much to work with, which is unfortunate.
What do you think, Lex?
Roldy's so crude, man. It's like, it's hilarious. Like, he is so crude, but with that said, I did see improvements. There are points in the fight where he was trying to, like, use his jab a lot more. I actually think with, like, a better trainer and, like, a bit more time, he could become, like, a level or two better. But it's tricky because he has the belt now. And so he's, like, I feel like he's all 12-rounders. Like, he can't be in 10-rounders, and he won't be given too many soft touches. So he's getting better, but I don't know, like, how long he'll last undefeated. He's quickly becoming, like, one of the best heels in the sport. People hate him.
I'll say this. I think people are way too hard on Rolly. I think, like, why are you judging Rolly like he's going to be Floyd Mayweather? He's not. Okay? He's not. Rolly's not here to box. He's sign up for KOs, not sign up for boxing. He's here to just beat the hell out of someone and hopefully knock them into next week. That's like Rolly's whole gimmick. But he looks like he's adding a few wrinkles. And that's good. I don't think those wrinkles are for him to win decisions, though. I think it's for him to set up his shots so that he can knock guys out. And look, if things break the right way, Rolly could have a sort of Marcos Maidana run. And if you guys don't remember, Marcos Maidana was very crude. There wasn't a lot of skill on display. If you want to really see this, like, go watch him flail around for 10 rounds against Devin Alexander and get completely outboxed. But Marcos Maidana eventually added some wrinkles. He learned the proper way to jab. Shout out Robert Garcia. And Maidana wound up having a really nice career. And with the type of devastating power that he had, it made him pretty dangerous. I don't know that Rolly's power is dangerous at this point. What I do know is that nobody in boxing throws punches as hard as Rolly. And now, notice I'm not saying Rolly is the biggest puncher in boxing. Notice I'm not saying he's got the most power in boxing. What I mean is, like, he actually just throws punches harder than anybody else. And the reason why is because Rolly doesn't care. Most guys know that they're still boxing, and when they throw hard punches, it's like using proper form. Now, that's not the same thing as throwing the type of punch that leaves you completely off balance and exposed. But Rolly doesn't care. He's in there just trying to, like, seriously punch as hard as he can. And you saw, like, there were so many times in the fight where, like, he like threw these, like, huge loaded up punches, and, like, they just hit glove. And, like, Sparrow had more than enough time to see the punch and get in position to block. But I do think Rolly's improving a lot, but, like, the ceiling isn't very high for Rolly. So, you know, I'm sure he'll get a couple more wins, and it's not too long before somebody's going to go in there and figure out how to outbox Rolly for 12 rounds. And we'll see how Rolly can adapt. I think that is the big question I have for him, is going forward, if we watch Rolly's career unfold, how does he adapt to adversity? How does he adapt to losing? Because I think, like, it's very clear Rolly's not here to go undefeated.
So I've got one more comment on this, which is just to put this in perspective, because something that vaguely reminded me of, I mean, it's not the same thing, but vaguely reminds me of, is Wilder when he was coming up. And I remember, you know, we've talked about this a lot, but going back like 5-6 years ago, when people would talk about Wilder, they would literally talk about him like he wasn't fit to be like an opponent on a prelim card, you know, just like abysmal garbage of that level, you know. And he ended up rising up to be, you know, considered at one point 1, 2, or 3 in the world at heavyweight. And, you know, we'll see what he has left in his career now. You know, where is Rolly? Like, we're talking about him being crude, talking about him being a meme fighter, talking about, you know, Maidana, you know, potential possibly. I mean, where do we think he is now? Is he in the top 5, top 10, top 15? Or is he, you know, just garbage outside of the top 50?
Rolly doesn't get ranked for me. He's like number one in the Rolly list.
He's number one in your heart.
No, he's yes. like, I have two lists at lightweight. There's like the lightweight fighters, and then there's the Rolly. And Rolly's number one. There's number no number two. On the he's just number one. Guys. And then everyone else at lightweight, you know, we have the normal rankings. And so Rolly can fight anybody because he's always going to be number one in the Rolly list.
Do you think Rolly could beat...
Rolly could beat anybody, but I'm also convinced that he could lose to everybody.
Felix Verdejo, that's the question. What happens with Felix Verdejo versus Rolly?
Amazing fight. Amazing fight. Verdejo's clearly the favorite there, but the moment Rolly hits him... Yeah, the moment Rolly hits him, it's like all like that would be one of those fights where Verdejo's the favorite to win, but also the favorite outcome is Rolly KO.
I was gonna say Jorge Linares.
Linares is a smooth operator. I think Linares. The question is like anybody who you pick for Rolly, the question is can they avoid getting hit with a haymaker? If the answer is yes, they're probably gonna win. If the answer is no, or does that person do well under pressure? If the answer is no there, then yeah, Rolly's got a shot.
Yeah, my general answer is he's probably in the top 20, which I mean as being like, that's pretty good, pretty high marks. Like, I mean, the thing is like if, meaning by that, like better than anyone Shakur Stevenson's ever fought. I mean, they're a weight class apart, but I mean,
Tom's
like,
doing a bit, guys.
Literally, I mean, no, but I mean, yeah, God, I can't believe I always end up coming back to the sure thing. I actually didn't, that would have been funnier if I'd meant it intentionally, but, no, but I mean, to that point though, it's like, he's not a random bum. He's not a guy that's being brought in as like a knockout loss opponent. He's crude, but effective. And that balances out to somewhere like probably top 15 or top 20 at 135. I think that's extremely fair. I don't think it's overly generous, and I don't think it's overly critical. I just think it's helpful to put it in perspective because we just get caught up using adjectives like, you know, and we don't really put in perspective where these guys actually are. I'm ready to move on.
All right. Well, Conor McGregor was fighting last night. Don't know if you guys realize this. 1.54 million people were trying to get onto ESPN Plus, and it crashed. I've been told,
Kevin Ioli for excellent. If you let me finish my joke here,
ESPN Plus customer service agent Kevin Ioli, not to be confused with DAZN customer service agent Lance Pugmire. But Conor got beat up last night. I don't know if you guys saw it. He looked pretty fast, I will say. McGregor still quick hands, but he appeared to have no punch resistance. He looked like James Kirkland. Poirier, I don't even know if I'm saying his name right. I'm sorry if I'm not. Tagged him a few times. McGregor, he crumbled. He fell to the ground on one of the shots, and Poirier walked in there and hit him with a vicious shot. McGregor quickly put his hand up to his ear and decided to have a nap on the canvas. And Poirier gets the win of his lifetime. Also, this is a rematch. I don't know if you guys knew. I found this out yesterday. So now they're 1-1. So obviously, you got to have a trilogy. We're not going to break down the fight, by the way, because we are not MMA experts. We are actually experts on nothing. But there is an implication here that we should talk about. There were rumors of a potential matchup between Conor McGregor and possibly the future president of the Philippines, Manny Pacquiao. Now, what do you think the plan is now that Conor McGregor got wrecked in the ring? Do you think Pacquiao is going to still be aiming for that shot against Conor McGregor, Lex?
I mean, given all the buzz about Pacquiao and Ryan Garcia's exhibition match, I'm assuming not. I don't know. I mean, like, what's going on in boxing is very weird right now. There's like everyone's trying to do, I don't know, like what do you call them? Exhibition fights, celebrity fights. So it's hard to, you know what's real and what's fake. I think if they really wanted to, they still could make McGregor and Pacquiao. You know, I easily think McGregor could just say I'm retiring and going out fighting Pacquiao and it does decent. But I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think they'll probably do a trilogy and Pacquiao will maybe do this exhibition. I don't know.
Tom?
Yeah. to the point of it being weird, I mean, it's like, you know, I have to frame this through like Sean Gibbons, who's like Pacquiao's representative, who's, you know, active on social media and very like he'll, I think he follows most of the social Sunday Puncher guys. He'll respond to us. It's always sort of bizarre and surreal how small the world of boxing is. But his big thing, you know, he's been sort of flirting with either McGregor or Spence. Those have been the names he's been kind of like teasing out for Pacquiao's return. As soon as McGregor lost, he went all in on Ryan Garcia. Anyone mentioned, you know, Pacquiao, this topic, he was posting pictures of Pac with Ryan Garcia. So I don't know. Does that make sense? I mean, I'm, you know, to Lex's point about things being weird, like we have the, you know, one example of one of these exhibitions, which was pretty successful, which was the Mike Tyson event. We don't know what the actual sales were, but general indication, I mean, it trended huge and seemed to be successful. Lots of good examples of like not that successful, like the YouTuber fights really ended up being like not very successful. I think like the first one, which had all the novelty of being the new, you know, of the new concept, I think was supposed to have done like a million cheap buys on YouTube. All the other ones heavily dropped off after that. Like we've gone through that in terms of like the low gates and, you know, not even great like Google Trend activity. I mean, the gates is obviously the more important thing for the days in YouTuber events. So I'm still pessimistic of that in general. I mean, I'm trying to keep this very brief. Spence versus Pacquiao still makes by far the most sense to me. I mean, like Spence is a name which actually spells pay-per-view. He's
Tom,
one of
real
the
quick. I feel like you should don't take your time on this. I mean, take your time on this topic, because I think a lot of people will be curious, since today everyone is talking about the exhibition. Ryan posted it, the theme's on. So I think you should like don't be shy.
Yeah, but we saw the same stuff about Tank and Ryan Garcia, and I never, you know, that was always hypothetical also, you know, just clout chasing. So it is bizarre though. I mean, let's just speak to that. Yeah, so there's been this like sort of seemingly semi-official announcement that Pacquiao is going to fight Garcia on in an exhibition. And the occasion for that is not Ryan Garcia fighting. It's not Pacquiao fighting. It's McGregor getting knocked out, which is so bizarre, you know, and especially like this had never been reported that there were serious talks about Pacquiao and Garcia. That went this went from a rumor spread by AC Slater and, you know, Mike Coppinger's repeating that rumor to now talk that this is semi-officially announced based on the occasion of McGregor getting knocked out. So I'll say again, to me, it's a little bit wacky still. And I'll just finish the thought before. These YouTuber events put up huge social media numbers. It's not clear how much that has translated into actual revenue.
Which is what Oscar said about Ryan Garcia.
Well, right. I mean, exactly. Right. When back when they wanted to pay Ryan Garcia $50,000, they were saying that this hasn't shown up in terms of real activity. And I mean, Ryan Garcia sold some tickets. He's not, you know, I don't think it's like a farce. But, you know, if Pacquiao fights Spence, he could get $30 million. He's the legitimate number three guy at 147.
Guaranteed. No,
right.
That's
plus,
before
plus
pay-per-view
upside. Exactly. You'd think that's the order of magnitude that you're talking about for that fight. Pacquiao's the legit number three guy. He's old, but he's not as old as Bernard Hopkins when he continued fighting. He's the legit number three guy at 147. This isn't like you're dragging a corpse out of retirement. You know, this isn't exploitation. He's a real fighter with real results who took Keith Thurman's O the last time he fought. I still think there's a real chance that fight happens, but you know, if he were able to fight Ryan Garcia and someone, you know, like we've spent a lot of time, or at least the podcast has, I haven't been on talking about Dazen, Fred, you know, was ranting about this Dazen giving Canelo so much money. Well, I don't know. I mean, the Yildirim, I don't remember exactly the sequence of that. I'm getting sort of tripped up with my words. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how strange it is that Dazen's paying so much money for Canelo to fight Yildirim. That doesn't really seem to make business sense. But so, you know, who knows? I mean, if Pacquiao can get free money to fight an exhibition against someone instead of Spence, fine. But I mean, if he's stepping into the ring for a real fight, I still think that makes the most sense, especially now that the McGregor possibility has seemed to go away longer. But I mean, Lex, do you think I covered it? I mean, you can ask questions or tell me to fill in if you think there's anything I missed, but I think that covered everything.
Yeah, I think that covered everything. What I'm, I guess, like, my thing is, like, what do you think? Say Ryan versus Pac comes off, right? Do you like, do you think it's good for the sport? No. Maybe that's like a cheesy question.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Angela,
like,
do you want to jump in?
Is it a cheesy? Is that a cheesy question for me to ask?
Well, look, we're going all over the place here, guys. There's a whole thing that we should talk about regarding the Pacquiao and Ryan Garcia potential exhibition. It's not going to be a real fight, first of all. And so, look.
Well, so first off, why wouldn't it be? Does that make any sense that it would be an exhibition? Who would want to watch two professional boxers have an exhibition with each other? I mean, what's the market value of that?
Well, it appears that every app out there has caught on that maybe these exhibition boxing matches are a way to get huge exposure to your app. Now, granted, will this have the same rub that Roy Jones and Mike Tyson had? Who knows? Probably not. Neither Ryan Garcia or Manny Pacquiao has the sort of cultural relevance as Mike Tyson has had for decades now. But, like, I've seen, like, a lot of, I think, weird takes about what this fight could be. And, like, let's just say that I'm right about everything, that it's going to be an exhibition between these two, and who cares what app is doing it and whatever. Let's just kind of, like, talk about the matchup and like, kind of, like, what it does for both fighters. I actually really like it. And I also hate it. And so I'll tell you why I love it. So why I love this is, like, this is actually thinking outside the box. It's a way for Ryan Garcia to get exposure in a sort of pseudo passing of the torch without actually having to take any risk whatsoever. If Ryan Garcia loses an exhibition to Manny Pacquiao, there are 100 reasons that you can come up with as to why, including the obvious one of that it was fixed. Can't say that about a real fight. But if Manny Pacquiao were to knock Ryan Garcia out or hurt him in this fight, which, you know, you would say is very plausible if these two guys were to fight, you could say it's an exhibition and it was kind of fixed and they were just trying to give the fans something interesting here. And vice versa. Neither guy loses. I think if you want to convert Ryan Garcia's Instagram following, which Oscar has said, like, that doesn't necessarily translate to ticket sales and things like that, this is one way to do it. Now, here's that's like taking the really optimistic view of things. But I think, and Tom, this is where you're going, I think, is that this set, and why I hate this, is that it sets a really dangerous precedent in boxing. And this may be seen as a way for, this is how you get paid. You take no risk. And let's not forget that Ryan Garcia is the interim WBC lightweight title. I know there are five titles at, actually probably more than five titles at lightweight. But that's what his designation is. And Manny Pacquiao is the WBA champion at 147 pounds. Both of those guys have legitimate opponents in their division that are desperate for fights with those guys. Now, if this catches on and now guys see that this is the only way to get paid, like, what's to say you just hold up your career and say, let's say Stephen Fulton says, like, no, I'm going to do an exhibition with Tank. And now boxing gets weird if everyone's trying to do these little cash grabs to, one, you protect your record, but two, you actually are holding up the sport. This is, I think this, and it's more dangerous for the guys with names, you know, like Ryan Garcia, like Tank, like Manny Pacquiao, even Spence. Like, it's dangerous for these guys because these guys are, we want to see them fight as a professional fighter, not in these weird farcical exhibitions where they're possibly wearing headgear, maybe not. So I think that's ridiculous. And I hope that this doesn't catch on.
Yeah, I'm waiting to rebut you whenever.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, yeah, I get what you're saying. And honestly, I've thought about that a little bit. I mean, you know, 2021 is just a weird time to be alive. You know, the whole Trump presidency was crazy. COVID's been crazy. So it's easy to think, okay, this thing got upended, so everything can get upended. But I just don't believe that. I mean, I'm a big believer that boxers draw their interest from boxing. This ridiculous phrase that I just said, but no, I mean that very simply. Like
they're competitors.
I'll talk about it this way. Like, well, I mean they produce interest in the general public from actually fighting is what I mean. Not within themselves, but like if you look at you know, I always talk about Google Trends, but I'm going to use it again just because it's a really easy way to demonstrate this point. If you look at a fighter's career on Google Trend, like just for, you know, the last 5 years of a fighter's career, and this is fighters, you know, even people who have had like outside of the ring stuff where they'll say something crazy and they'll get on TMZ or, you know, you can see like little spikes. But generally speaking, if you look over like the last 5 years of a fighter's career, you'll see a spike every time they fight, and that'll be like, you know, 20 times more activity than like any other time. People, the general public, care about professional fighters when they fight each other, and more than that, when they fight good competitive fights and other big names. That's what happens. If they fight a nothing opponent and get a knockout, that basically doesn't register. And if they do some other stupid thing, like put out an album or, you know, go to the racetrack in a Ferrari and, you know, do like a track day, that might be an interesting social media post, but that doesn't generate widespread public interest. Professional fighter at 135 is interesting to the extent that he's in the ring with another fighter in his weight class, which is going to be a competitive fight. I just think that this is really, I mean, there's nothing more interesting about an exhibition than a real fight. And I just don't think it's going to have that much of an impact. I mean, this has happened in boxing history. Muhammad Ali fought tons of exhibitions. I mean, you know, in publicity stunts, like one of the very famous clips of Muhammad Ali holding ropes and like dodging a bunch of punches is from an exhibition, and it was basically a performance. It's not, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where it's easy to make fun of like casual boxing fans when they post that and marvel at Muhammad Ali's skill. And it was, you know, basically a performance during an exhibition. I'm just not that worried about it because I think ultimately, I mean, this is something like, this will be the last thing I say about it. It might sound a little lofty, but boxing, in the last 5 years has done more to become a real sport than in any time that I've followed it in terms of like, you know, the actual top 20 of a division actually getting fights and having a sense of like, who is the actual top 20 in a division instead of a network just deeming one guy the star and they get to pick who they fight and that decides what the ranking is. You know, you just have so much coverage of the sport on different networks. So many different guys getting exposed. I mean, it's just, it's never been closer to being a real sport, and it's aggravating to me to see people try to do stuff like this. But, you know, in the time since Mayweather McGregor, those have been more the exception than the rule. And I really think ultimately, I'll just sort of try to bring it around to what I was saying originally. Public interest in boxers is having them fight in real professional fights overwhelmingly, and I think that that will continue to be the case. Anyway, that was long, but I hope that was useful.
I think it's probably gonna happen. I think one, it's possible, but two, I think it's gonna happen. I think this is why Canelo's fighting so frequently, is that he lost out on a lot over the pandemic and people are trying to make up for it. And this seems like a really painless cash grab on behalf of Pacquiao and Ryan Garcia's teams. Anyway, just to go back to
So you both think that there is some legitimacy to Ryan Garcia and Pacquiao fighting an exhibition?
I'm 99% sure that it's going to happen.
100% horseshit.
I'm 99% sure it's going to happen.
So I'm certain it will happen, and you're certain it will happen.
Yeah.
What did you say, Lex?
I don't bet on that.
To me. So you think it's going to happen also?
I'm not saying I think for sure it's going to happen, but don't bet on that because I don't know if I put it. You said Angelo said 99. I don't know if I'm going to say 99, but I'll put it above 50.
Yeah, and I put it at zero. So, you know, time will tell.
I'll just say this though about the, you know, Pacquiao potentially fighting McGregor, because I just had to get this out here. I thought that the fight actually was a long shot to happen between Pacquiao and McGregor, and now I think that there's no chance that it happens. I think McGregor's grift has been and will decrease each time that he goes out into the ring or the octagon and gets himself humiliated, which he's now done. You know, he got stopped by Floyd. He tapped out against Khabib after looking like he had no interest in really engaging in a fight after he saw what he was gotten himself into. He punched an old man, and the man took the punch like it was nothing. And now he's gotten knocked out by Poirier. And ESPN did a fantastic job, I must say, explaining his past legal indiscretions on TV. They talked about it like they were telling their 4-year-old son why their dad was in jail. I don't see it happening. I think McGregor's like going to continue to, if he ever steps in the ring, and I believe that that is the case again, I would be shocked if he continues to pull in the numbers that he has. But I could be wrong, you know? I think that there's certainly a strong possibility that I'm wrong here. Let's move on.
Yeah, I want to comment on that very quickly. Just a fun little jag. I know we're running along, but I think it's worth it. trust me, I'll make this pay off. So I rewatched The Hunt for Red October last week, which is just such a good thriller. And just watching the bonus features, and the producer was talking about what it was like to, if anyone hasn't seen that, it's a great movie, you need to check it out, what it was like casting Sean Connery. And he was talking about how audiences and even like people on the crew, just there's an element to Sean Connery where whether it's because he was James Bond or whatever, just like wanted to like him, wanted to root for him. Like people involved with the movie, like wanted him to be good in it. The audience, as soon as he came on screen, like want it to be like a good performance. Like you don't need to sell the audience on him. Like they're rooting for him to be like good in the role before he even says anything. And, you know, it's been interesting following like a similar element to that with Mike Tyson, where he was worth caring about when he was like 22 and has done basically everything imaginable to make people, you know, for logical reasons, not want to pay to watch him fight since then. You know, from a rape conviction to repeated, you know, quits to, you know, just crazy erratic behavior. But there is such a large contingent of people who just believe Mike Tyson is an all-time great and continue to think that he's one training camp away, even in his 50s, from performing at that level, which is just astounding. And, you know, I had seen that for, you know, 15 years following the sport. And Conor McGregor, in, you know, between any amount of combat sports, is the you know, strongest example of that I've seen since then. There's just a huge contingent of people who will root for him, who believe he's going to come back and just have magical performances. I mean, he shouldn't be considered a credible, you know, high level fighter at this point. It didn't take this loss to tell people that. So vaguely agree with what you're saying. And I think similar to the way that Mike Tyson was still able to draw in his exhibition fight with Roy Jones, there's still definitely chance for Conor McGregor to draw. I mean, granted, with Mike Tyson, there were diminishing returns. I mean, some of his final fights were pathetic and barely drew anything. There will be public interest, but that gets back to the original point I was trying to say before, which is, you know, there's a difference between generating interest and getting people to actually pay for a product. High quality championship boxing is a product people will pay for. It still remains to be seen to me how much people will actually pay out of pocket for this celebrity stuff. You know, so that's just a broad statement. Anyway,
that certainly wasn't quick, Tom.
It was like 2 minutes, and it was a good story. Anyway, watch Hunt for Red October.
Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah. Okay, so Canelo's announced his next fight, which is going to be against Avni Yildirim. It'll be back on DAZN, which will be the first of what is reported to be a 2-fight deal, which basically says that he's going to be fighting Billy Joe Saunders this coming May. And I think there's a take out there that you can criticize, or that you can't criticize the matchup, because this is a mandatory fight from the WBC. But I also think that those people who say that are ignoring the fact that the WBC was willing to make an exception for Canelo. And, you know, we know that at this point the WBC is willing to bend over backwards for Canelo. And so the question is, why do you think Canelo took this fight?
Lex?
I mean, it's pretty obvious. Like, DAZN is overpaying. I don't know what they're paying him, but whatever it is, it's probably a gross overpay. And so I think
just to reframe this a bit, he had decided on the opponent before DAZN signed the deal, right? I mean, is that where you're coming from, Angelo?
Well, yeah, the WBC is the one who says that he had to fight Yildirim and Canelo.
Yeah, they announced that for like a week after David Benavidez missed weight, basically. Give or take.
It wasn't a week, but yeah, it was like shortly after.
Give or take.
So yeah.
I don't know.
I think it was even announced before Canelo's fight with Callum Smith.
Say it again?
I think it was even announced before the Callum Smith fight.
For sure. It definitely was.
Well, right. But wasn't it also said that the WBC was willing to grant an exception?
Correct.
Yeah. Whether they said that or not, they were going to. It's Canelo. Like, they love Canelo. Canelo is the guy in the sport or one of the guys. So if Canelo put his foot down and was like, I'm not taking this. I want whoever, Caleb Plant or Benavidez or Billy Joe Saunders. They'd be like, all right, cool. Like, we'll go that direction. It is Canelo. So, like, for me, I'm not the biggest fan of this fight. You know, like, I flip-flop between, like, who cares? And, like, I'm not feeling it. And I'm more on the not feeling it side now. I think, like, Canelo's one of the dudes. Like, I want to look back on Canelo's career and be like, he did it like Floyd. He did it like Pacquiao. I don't remember Floyd or Pacquiao taking like a Smith and then Yildirim back to back. Like, that's not, and I get it, we're in a pandemic, so it's a little tricky, right? But I don't think it matters for Canelo. Canelo stays sharp. He's that good. I want to see him in a big fight. So it's kind of not what you asked me, but why did Canelo take it? To get paid? Am I feeling the fight? Not really. Will I watch it? Probably not. I might. I don't know. I'm not excited about it. But good for Canelo. He's getting paid at a time that it's hard to get paid.
Do you have a take, Angelo?
Yeah, I think, look, this fight was impossible to turn down. I think it was the perfect fight because, like, Canelo saw, you know, it's so weird that he was adamant on, you know, the reporting was that he could have had the pay-per-view with Caleb Plant. He just had to not fight in December because it didn't work out for their pay-per-view schedule for Canelo to fight in December, like 2 or 3 weeks after Errol Spence had fought on pay-per-view. It just didn't make a lot of sense for them. And but he was adamant that he had to fight in December. And I feel like Canelo, obviously the guy's got a lot of money, but he's doesn't got a lot of money compared to what he feels he should have earned over the course of last year. And now he's trying to make up for it. And so that explains the December fight. It explains why he's willing to do this quick 2 month turnaround and fight a guy like Avni Yildirim. And this is made a lot easier when you've got an absolute moron in the room who's willing to overpay for this fight. Because let's be real here, Canelo's about to get paid a lot of money. A lot of money that this fight is not worth. And, you know, we'll see who's got the balls to report that. But when the numbers come out for this fight, we're going to realize that Canelo got paid, we'll say, the same amount of money that he probably could have gotten, would probably get paid right now to fight, let's say, I don't know. I would say that this fight, he's going to get paid maybe three times more. Let's say two times more than the fight with Yildirim is actually worth. But somebody's willing to pay that. And so I got no problem with him taking this fight. It's quick, too. It's like, do you think Yildirim's going to go in there and make Canelo go 12 hard rounds? Get out of here. Yildirim is here to do 3 rounds, maybe. Canelo's about to school him, maybe knock him out, finish this thing quick, and get out of there. Like, everyone's got a price. And, like, Canelo's price was, don't mess up the date in May. Pay me a certain level of money, and I will fight whoever you want as long as it doesn't throw off May. And Avni Yildirim checks the boxes.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, like, you could tell I'm not feeling this, and I'm a little annoyed, and I feel like I don't feel like this has.
Sounds
much
like you're about to cry.
With...
Are you?
No, my
emotional?
Throat was like I needed. Like I put my water away. My throat is a little cracky. But yeah, I don't this doesn't feel like it has much to do about boxing. Like
that was about money.
But that's not cool to me. Like, okay, so you mean to tell me
you guys
gotta
realize Canelo's about his money and only about his money.
But it's not even about Canelo's money. Like, so you mean to tell me a couple months ago, DAZN goes from saying Yildirim is completely unacceptable and we will not put on that fight. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden, like, this is the fight and they're paying probably more. They're probably paying double what they offered before. How, like, that's weird to me. And Eddie Hearn is promoting him. Like, Tom, you want to put that together? Like that, I'm not. It's just like something stinks
something
with that
is,
whole situation.
Something is definitely off here. You know, we went from saying Avni Yildirim is not an get that shit out of here. We will not approve Avni Yildirim. We will not approve anybody other than Anthony Joshua, Conor McGregor, and Gennady Golovkin. And now all of a sudden, we're down to pay full just about full price for Callum Smith and now Avni Yildirim. And the only thing that if we look at the variables in this equation, the only thing that's changed is the promoter. And we've gone from Golden Boy Promotions to Matchroom Promotions, and all of a sudden the wallets are open. That is really weird.
Like this is like corporate, like what's the word where you're like stealing money from the company, like
embezzlement.
Yeah, they're like embezzling money through. It's like so clownish what's going on. This is not about
that,
putting
Tom?
On good fights. It's not about bringing exposure to Canelo. Say it again. I'm sorry, Tom.
I said, what Tom? He said, no comment.
Sorry, Les. Yeah, I can keep going.
No, I'm just annoyed because like the pandemic has brought a lot of weird energy out of boxing. And I said it on the podcast that didn't get put on. And I'm going to say it again. Like, we need to get back to like doing this the right way, like Pacquiao versus Ryan, they're not even in the same division. Like, I know people are excited. It's two cool names, but like, what's the precedent? Now Canelo's fighting Yildirim for no reason. Eddie's paying this dude. Like, come on, what is going on, man? Like, Tom, come on, back me up, please.
Yeah, I can't really back you up actually on this one. And we've talked in the chat a bit. I mean, I'll. I always promise to be succinct, and then I'm not. Here's my attempt at being succinct is really what I mean when I say that. First off, I have no problem with him fighting Yildirim at all. Like, people keep DMing me like this is the worst thing in the world, and I don't really get it.
Well,
I mean,
matchup sucks, but that's different from the reasons why it's happening.
Well, no, I mean, so, okay.
Don't sit here and tell me Yildirim's a competitive fight and you're looking forward to the fight. There's two different things here. And in terms of the fight that's going to play out when the bell rings, that sucks. But everything else about it, to me, most of it makes sense, actually.
Sure. So let me say this a different way. If this were a pay-per-view, I would not buy a pay-per-view.
It is a pay-per-view.
Well, okay.
The cheap pay-per-view.
I mean, it's like a pay-per-view, kind of, but it's pay-per-view.
It's pay-per-view.
Well, I'm just going to continue on. If this were, $75 Fox pay-per-view, I would not buy the pay-per-view based on this fight. You know,
yes, you would.
Depending on
you got money for that, Tom. Don't make me go over there.
come on, let's not get pedantic here. I'm just saying it's not an event. Great, it's not an event fight. It's a fight. There's an extremely close parallel to Canelo doing this when he fought Rocky Fielding. I've continued to say he seems to have a reason, whether it's because of sponsorships or just his personal goals for his career, that he wants to fight twice per year. When he got suspended and only had the one fight because of the Golovkin fight, he came back quickly to the Rocky Fielding fight. This is another parallel to that. He only got one fight because of a combination of the pandemic and DAZN trying to screw him, that now he is likely to do three fights in 2021 with this, you know, starting to catch up on that from the one fight he had last year. Great. I don't mind it. Again, Yildirim is not a guy outside the top 100 who's being brought in to make a top ranked prospect who's terrible look like they're not terrible. You know, he's a top 15 or top 20 guy.
No, ain't a prospect, though.
Embarrassingly blown out by Chris Eubank, but besides that, looks like a top 15, top 20 guy. But yeah, no, not an event. but not the worst thing in the world if Canelo wants to take a little bit of a soft touch. And DAZN is backing up a dump truck of money to his house. So, you know, Canelo is enjoying the situation where he's the most powerful free agent. And, you know, he's the biggest draw in the sport. He's a free agent. And basically what he's saying is, I'm going to do this one or two fights at a time. Make me an offer I can't refuse. And DAZN is doing that. And so I don't fault Canelo in any way for this. He's fought a great string of opponents. I just don't mind that much. Would it have been better if he waited until May and fought Caleb Plant? Maybe. I mean, if I had a 1A and a 1B, maybe that would be the 1A. But, you know, if he's going to fight Yildirim now and then Billy Joe Saunders and then fight Caleb Plant and David Benavidez in the next 24 months, I don't mind that. And I think Canelo will, because he's shown every indication that he wants to fight the, you know, that's how he wants his career to go. He has confidence. He's number one pound for pound, and he's going to fight these guys. So I just don't mind that much. I mean, and from DAZN's perspective, a lot of people are, you know, going crazy about that. This makes no sense. Why is this happening? And, you know, this is my attempt at being succinct. It's like, there's been a clear shift in strategy for DAZN. I mean, I talked before saying I didn't think Canelo would fight on the network again, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, what I meant before was, from DAZN's standpoint of being a real business, and I'm being kind of snarky, but I mean that intentionally, where the goal was to, you know, set a high budget in terms of what they were going to pay for sports, but, you know, take the gamble that they could bring in enough subscribers that they would ultimately flip, where they'd be bringing more money than what they're paying for in license fees. You know, that is the legitimate version of DAZN. What they're trying to do now is they sort of haphazardly cut their spending on sports. It's hard to estimate how much. My rough estimate is about a quarter. You know, we're talking to Fred. He differs wildly. He thinks they've only cut it marginally. But, you know, you see in boxing, they've cut down to about maybe 40% of what they spent in 2019. That's sort of their plan going forward, is about 40% of that spending. So they're cutting the spending way down. They've expanded internationally into all these territories. They can get these hardcore early adopters, you know, however many people there are in Lithuania that want to watch Canelo. Well, great. Now they can subscribe. So, but these are cheaper rates. So they're going to show a higher subscriber number than they had before, greatly reduced spending. And they're trying to use this, which is not really a real business model, but they're using this to try to leverage additional investment or a sale of, you know, what remains of DAZN after they've sold off a lot of, you know, the overall Perform Group assets. So how does Canelo fit into that? Having Canelo, he's a big name. He's the biggest name in boxing globally. You know, for them, it's a relative bargain. In the past, they've been spending, say, roughly $2 billion a year on all their sports. Boxing is just part of that. If they pay Canelo $50 million a year going forward, or 60 or 75 or whatever it ends up being if he fights three times this year, that gives them a lot of, like, veneer of respectability, bang for the buck. So, and this might sound extreme to some people. This might sound like I'm being mild to other people, but that's how I see it. Is basically they're trying to create the veneer of a successful company to sell or seek investment, because it had become clear before that if you're spending $2 billion a year on sports content and you're only bringing in like $300 million in revenue, that that's not a very good business model. So they're switching it up, and Canelo is part of this kind of appearance of respectability. Is that good? Is that ethical? No, definitely not. But they're sort of a rational actor in that sense. Anyway, that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, the interesting thing, and I know that we're not going to hear anybody really reporting on this, but it's just I can't get over. And I agree with most of what you said. You know, I don't blame Canelo for taking this fight. It seems like someone's like, yo, I'll be stupid here. And Canelo's like, oh, okay. Yeah. okay. Well, if that's what you want to offer for the fight, I can't imagine. I really can't imagine any other network. Like, you know, we know Bob Arum would have offered like 1.5 for the fight, but I can't really imagine anyone else approaching the number that Canelo is going to get for this fight. I really
well,
can't.
Just because we've been tiptoeing around it. I think what was reported was
nothing's
a
been reported. Fight
deal. What reported? I mean, yeah, it's been reported. People have said what 25 plus 25 and 3. So basically 25 and 28 for a 2-fight deal, where one of the fights should be worth like $5 million. So he's basically getting way overpaid for one fight and pretty reasonably paid for the other fight.
That's, I think he'll be overpaid for both of them. If you guys think Billy Joe Saunders is going to be a fight worth $25 million, I'm sorry, but I would like to work for you.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's still Canelo, you know.
It is Canelo, but I do think that there's sell
Barker
for this level of opponents.
I just wanted to quickly say that everything you said, I agree with. And I may have sounded harsh on Canelo, but I think I'm more upset that the zone strategy, it's like, in
just
my
so
opinion,
cynical.
It's just bogging down boxing a little bit. And it's like, it's frustrating that they're throwing so much money around, and it's like spreading the product a little thin. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'll speak to that. I mean, I've said, this is what I want. I want Canelo on Fox. Or even, let's say, ESPN, hypothetically. I want, you know, he's the biggest name in the sport. I'd love to see the biggest media entities in the sport behind him. That would be the best thing for growing all of boxing. I think that would be the best thing for Canelo's long-term earnings. And I think this is a pretty cynical move. You know, he's going to continue to be behind a paywall. The Yildirim fight and the Billy Joe Saunders fights are not going to draw a huge amount of interest. But, you know, Canelo doesn't owe anything to anyone. He's at a point, like you guys both were just agreeing with what I was saying. You know, I think, don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, he's at a point where he's got a huge amount of leverage. And he's just, again, just saying, how much do you guys want to pay me? And DAZN is driving a dump truck full of money up to his house to take a shit fight. And why would he turn that down? You know, they made him an offer he couldn't
refuse. Well, I think he's also like, Canelo's...
I was going to say he shouldn't turn it down. It's too much money to turn down for such easy work. It's just tough as a fan that wants to see real action. Like, we have to wait a little bit. And I feel like with DAZN, we've been waiting a long time.
Yeah, that's and it. I think that the silver lining there is why I'm not that worried about it. Canelo is still younger than people think because he's been around for so long. This isn't a retirement contract. You know, this isn't like a Golovkin's contract where he knows this is the end of his career. If Canelo spends a year fucking around with DAZN and, you know, using up, you know, he fights Callum Smith, Yildirim as a joke fight, and then Billy Joe Saunders, and then goes to do other stuff somewhere else, I don't think that's the end of the world. It's sort of wasted, you know.
My point wasn't specifically for Canelo. It was more so for just DAZN's entire slate. Like, you know, it's been a while, and I don't think they've delivered on their promise of, like, changing the game of boxing and bringing the it's just a lot of underwhelming fights. But for the amount of money, guys' lives are on the line. You can't expect them to say no to 30, 40, 25 million. It's crazy.
Well, I think Canelo, at 30 years old, also sees the light at the end of the tunnel for his career. I don't think Canelo is the guy who's going to – I don't think he's looking at this and it's like, yeah, I got 10 more years in this. I think Canelo's looking at this and is like, I might have 5, and I'm going to get paid in these 5. I'm going to make it count. And if I keep going, I'll keep going. But I think he's got to be responsible and look at, like, you know, what is the best case scenario for the rest of my career? And I highly doubt that that involves him fighting at 42 years old, like some people. Alexander Povetkin.
Listen.
Well, yeah, clearly thought that. I didn't have a good comeback. Clearly,
listen, that's
Pacquiao
that's,
here, but yeah,
Canelo is making major league like max money, like your LeBron's, Dame Lillard's. I can't name any football or baseball guys because those aren't really my sport.
He's not making Mayweather money though.
He's not
Floyd.
That will come.
I don't think, like, so. It ain't coming.
So he's going to fight on DAZN for the rest of his career?
No, I'm saying he'll never make Floyd money. We got into this on the podcast that we didn't release, but, like, you know, my general point on that podcast was, like, Floyd, like, Canelo's not Floyd. Like, Floyd ain't.
I wish you put that out. I thought we had some good action.
Yeah, I couldn't put it out. But Canelo is not Floyd. He is a very big fighter, and he's certainly big enough at this point that he's the top earner in the sport, the most popular guy, blah, blah, blah. But he ain't Floyd. There's levels to this, and there's another level that Canelo, that in theory he could get to, but I don't think he will. And that's because he, like, Floyd's got something that, you know, we have not seen any other fighter bring to the table. The balance of skill and ability to sell their own fight, like, no one's got that. And it certainly isn't Canelo. And so he's not Floyd. And that's why I think that it's easy. Like, he sees it easier to just take a $25 million guarantee. I mean, I would too.
It's too much money. It's hard to say no to that kind of money.
For Tom, maybe, but not us.
Everything there is to say about that.
So this coming Saturday, you know, Canelo, obviously, with that news, we'll move on to Caleb Plant. He will return to the ring, and I feel like these two guys will meet somewhere down the road. But until then, Caleb Plant will face Caleb Truax for the IBF super middleweight title. I don't know. This isn't necessarily a great fight. I get why they're doing it. The IBF, for some reason, I believe has mandated Caleb Truax as the opponent. And so, if you know, we're not going to really say much about Canelo fighting Yildirim. I guess we can't criticize the matchmaking here. But it is a bit of a letdown for Caleb Plant, given his last few opponents haven't been very exciting. His performances have been great, as they should be at this level, but just not very impressive. Anything you guys want to say about this?
There?
I don't have a question about this fight. I mean, I don't know what you want to. What can you say about it? It's like, yeah, Caleb Plant's fighting. He's probably going to smoke Caleb Truax. Call out Canelo after. David Benavidez might break in. He's going to break the bubble. He's going to come in and maybe threaten Caleb Plant's life. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll say I'm pretty disappointed. I didn't. Do we know the details of the IBF thing? I actually didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure. Let me look.
Oh, you can do that while I'm ranting for a second. I'm actually pretty down on this. You know, I just, like, I feel like Truax is in danger of like it feeling like a Matt Korobov fight where he just like gets an injury and it just ends after two rounds or something. It's pretty minimal. I mean, even as like a showcase for Plant, you know, I mean, look, Truax has been like a fringe contender for a long time. He won a title for a second against James DeGale in kind of a fluky situation, as DeGale was really, really, you know, falling off the cliff at the end of his career. I mean, Truax is a great guy. I mean, he's active on boxing Twitter and he's, you know, by all accounts, one of the good guys in the sport. But I am frustrated that I feel, you know, to the point that I was saying before when, you know, I was calling out Shakur Stevenson as far as a guy who there's just not a lot of, or Billy Joe Saunders, where there's just not a lot of substance to their resume. I feel that about Caleb Plant. I mean, he has one very solid win and, you know, looked sensational fighting Jose Uzcategui. And, you know, really just outside of that, before that and since then, just not a lot of substance. I mean, I have become a sucker in recent years for just like Samson bringing a tough guy up from South America you've never heard before who's going to give guys tough fights. You know, Jason Rosario ended up becoming the unified, you know, junior middleweight champion. I think we'll see more of him before all is said and done. I just kind of like to see Caleb Plant with a young, hungry lion who's going to push him. And that's definitely not who Caleb Truax is. And like I said, I even just fear that this is just going to be, you know, we had that awful Luis Ortiz fight on Fox in November. I really hope it's not something like that. When given a big spotlight that got a big football push, that it's just going to kind of be a mess. And I think, you know, I think there's a risk for that. So I wish I could end on a more positive note. I mean, we do get the return of everyone's favorite prospect, Joey Spencer, on this card.
The only guy to ever win Prospect of the Year more than four times.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's popular with he has his own Instagram following. If they do a PBC fan vote, he's gonna win it, even if it's like Fighter of the Year.
I could make a joke about his following, but I'm not going to.
I don't even know. You'll have to tell me offline. I don't even know what direction that's going in.
Oh, you listener know what joke I'm about to make. I accidentally hit play on a video.
but
it wasn't like I was adding my own laugh
track. No,
there's
going to be a sloppy heavyweight fight. But anyway, that's what I have to say about it. Will I be watching? Yeah, but I'm sort of cringing a bit inside going in that it's might not be something to be too happy about. Do you guys have anything more positive to say about it than that?
No, it's boxing. I'll watch that. It's Caleb Plant. I love to watch the high level operators in the sport fight. And I don't know if I've given this take on the podcast before, but I don't care about mismatches. I really don't. Would it be nice if Caleb Plant was fighting somebody ranked higher? Well, Caleb Truex is ranked number 3 in the IBF. And there's no number 1 or number 2.
Oh, right. Which means he's the mandatory, right? I mean, the IBF has a weird thing where 1 and 2 slots are saved for, like, when higher, challengers want to fight each other to become, like, name the mandatory. So, yeah, I'm getting kind of into the weeds, but, yeah. So your point is he's, like, sort of in the rankings.
I'm not going to hate on the matchup. It's not terribly interesting, but if Caleb Plant just like destroys Truax in 4 rounds, like I'm not gonna be like, oh damn, that was a shame. I feel like I've gotten to a point as a boxing fan, maybe this is just cynicism and resignation and just defeat setting in, but like sometimes I just don't care about like these bad mismatches. Like if there's at least some justifiable sort of like explanation for why they're happening, like in the case of Canelo Yildirim, it's like, would I like to see a better fight? Yeah. But like, I'm not going to sit here and complain about it because I know why it's happening and it'd just be a waste of my energy and my everything, to complain about it. I'll complain about other things.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of, you put it pretty succinctly there, maybe by accident, but it's like, I would much rather be a fight that I was at least mildly looking forward to instead of a fight where we're worried about whether it's actually bad for the sport. You know, noted, you don't have strong negative sentiment, but it sounds like you don't really have much positive sentiment either.
I think it's funny that, like, and Tom, I'm not calling you out.
Call him out. No, call him out.
No, I'm not,
Tommy's
no,
fucking
no,
calling
Tom,
you out.
Not,
Tom,
I'm
you're
right,
fucking called out.
And everything. No.
No,
I just think
Tommy's calling you out.
We have two. We have two guys who could be fighting each other and should probably be fighting each other in Plant and Canelo. Mm-hmm. One guy's taking a mandatory, and everyone's like, "Oh, it's all good. Don't worry about it. It's a good fight. Who cares?" The other guy, it's like damn near a similar level of competition. Oh no, this is trash. It's like. Like, this is crazy. My thing with 168
well,
is
since
I don't think
I've been called out, I'm going to defend my
Tom,
own.
No, it sounds like he called you a crybaby.
I didn't. No, because this
Plant
is a take.
If Plant had fought Callum Smith 2 months ago, I wouldn't be complaining about this fight. And if he were set to fight Billy Joe Saunders 4 months ago, I wouldn't be complaining either. You know, if it's just speed bump in between those two solid fights. That's what
my rebuttal to that. And again,
I think Lex
not
called you a bitch.
About.
What do you have to say,
no,
Tom?
No, I didn't. Don't do that. I would never do that to my brother Tom. But I don't think 68 is deep enough. Like who? Like
pause.
How many guys can you really run off at 168 that like
pause
that are free that would be good options for Plant?
I just think, look, if you showcase guys, you end up finding guys like Aleem, right? And if you send Samson down to South America, you can bring back some good stuff, I think.
Oh, yes, you know, like you can. Samson, never mind.
Yeah, wink, wink.
Another Uzkadagi to come out of the streets of, where is he from? Not
Colombia.
Uruguay, is it?
Well, I think he was insinuating bringing back drugs from South America.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I wasn't going there, exactly.
But no, Samson is, you know.
It just sounded that way when you said it.
Yeah. No, but I'm just bringing it full circle. When I was complaining earlier about guys without deep, substantial resumes, you know, this feels like that a little bit. But, you know, look, it gets Caleb Truax paid. Maybe the better version of him, injury-free, will show up. That's what I'm hoping for. What I don't want is just, you know, the Raleigh fight, I think, is still fresh in my mind is what I'm talking about. I just don't want it to be like an embarrassing thing like that. I don't want it to be like a Korobov fight, you know.
Well,
if we're just going to be a showcase fight, I wouldn't mind as much. I just feel like there's a cringe factor possible.
I feel like the there are levels to this, and like Korobov is like just a disappointing no finish, whereas the Luis Ortiz fight where that guy was just like, oh no, this guy actually hits hard, I'm done. There's that level of embarrassment. I feel like we're more likely to see the Korobov type of finish where, I mean, you said this, Truax just like his body breaks down. But
you're basically betting on Truax getting injured, essentially.
Is there a line for that? We should bet on that.
let's set it right now. Like what?
Three rounds? I'm honestly like that's how I view.
He's
this
already
fight.
Torn
I'm
his Achilles. He's gonna tear his other
the
one.
Other one.
He'll tear his
ACL in the third round.
Jermall fought that guy whose legs just didn't work.
Sebastian Hyland? No, that's the way the guy walked. Hey, Sebastian, that's just the way the guy walked. One of his legs is longer than the other.
He's got one of those boots when he's not boxing.
I was at that fight. It looked like he had like a wood leg.
Yeah, that leg was not real. It was actually porcelain.
That too. I'm going to play devil's advocate against myself for a second just to eat up even more time from the podcast. I've said this for a few years going back to when Caleb Plant beat Uscategui and sort of trying to project ahead 2 or 3 years in his career.
So that was just 2 years ago, but go on.
No, but I was just saying at the time, projecting ahead 2 or 3 years, we're 2 years into that. You know, he's a guy who can look sensational against a lower level of opponent. Some guys need a certain level of opponent to look good, but he's flashy enough, he can look good.
Not Rolly. You do it against all levels.
Rolly indeed looks like Rolly against all levels. But Caleb Plant can look flashy. So as long as, you know, it's always a little ridiculous that I'm talking about this injury stuff. But yeah, as long as Truax doesn't get like injured, I think it should be a dominant win that looks good on TV. And clearly
I think what you're
that's
trying to
the
say
intention.
Is like when Caleb Plant has success in a fight, he can look phenomenal. Whereas most guys can be like kind of workmen. And you don't really get a sense of how truly skilled they are when they win. But Caleb Plant, it's like really obvious. And I think Jorge Linares is another guy like that who, like, when he's outboxing guys, he looks amazing. Adrian Broner, when he outboxes guys and settles into a rhythm, Broner can have like these stretches in a fight right. where it's like he lands everything and the guy can't touch him. And then, like, you know, then he's Adrian Broner the rest of the fight. But yeah, I agree with you. Caleb Plant, when he looks good, looks phenomenal.
Right. I mean, another negative example, like Andrade, you know, his way of dominating a guy who's like ranked 100 in the division is to not get hit very much, but to only land like 7 punches per round. You know, it's like Caleb Plant can look flashy, land a lot of clean offense, get the knockout, send everyone home early. You know,
and I think
and just to be clear, Truax isn't like, again, Truax is not that bad. You know, he's in the IBF rankings. He's another guy, assuming he's not injured, is probably in the top 20 in the division. This is not like a zero level opponent. Anyway, I've said enough.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. We'll see how the fight plays out. Maybe Caleb Truax pulls off the upset as he did against
James DeGale.
James DeGale. I don't know. I was thinking of Denny Jacobs for whatever reason. Oh yeah, never mind. I'm not even going to go there. But anyway, I hope you guys have listened up to this point. I hope you guys enjoyed our podcast. Just so you know, we do all like each other. We just like to mess with Tom, okay? We love him, though.
I mean, I don't... I'm fine. Look, it's nothing compared to when I'm on with Fred, and I don't mind that either.
You and Fred gang up on me.
Oh my god, look at how bullied you are.
I know, it's just ridiculous. Like, I'm the one who has to do all this damn work, and then you and Fred just have to gang up on me and talk forever about these like crazy things, and then don't let me involve myself. It's just ridiculous. So, but guys, if you like the podcast, there's a couple of things you could do for us. One, you could leave a good rating, a good review. You don't have to do a review, but like a great rating, 5 stars only. If you want to go lower than 5 stars, and I certainly wouldn't fault you for that, but I think you should talk to us first and tell us what we could do to improve. Like, we are receptive to taking feedback, except for Tom. Tom, I had to slap him around a little bit so I could get into his brain, but we'll try our best. We do intend to make a podcast that you guys really like. You could also subscribe to our Patreon. Now, if you have our calendar, okay, we have a calendar that syncs all these fights into your phone so you don't have to ever wonder what time to watch a fight or when to watch them. Subscribe to our Patreon. That helps pay for that. That is a service that we have to pay for in addition to other things. But definitely when you do that, you get, obviously, you don't, the calendar is free, but you get access to our chat. You get access to a Patreon feed of podcasts, which are more podcasts, which are mostly all boxing, but occasionally we'll talk about other things. And then you also get, did I say the chat? I think the chat is really cool. And that's it. So if you like our podcast, do all those things. If not, come back next week. We'll be back with a recap of Caleb Plant's destruction of Caleb Truex. And we'll reveal who bet on what injury would take place during the fight. Also on the undercard, Joey Spencer, Darmani Rock will fight Michael Coffey in what is like a sneaky little heavyweight fight that might be real interesting.
Sloppy heavyweight action.
Whoa. Sloppy? I don't know about that. Sneaky, but I don't know about sloppy. I don't like calling heavyweight sloppy because, never mind. And then I think Rancis Barthelemy is making his long-awaited return. I don't know about you guys, but I like him.
He got banished from the sport after the Robert Easter fight.
Maybe.
That was the worst fight I've ever seen.
No, I've seen worse. I've definitely seen worse. But maybe Al had a talk with Barthelemy and like gave him a little bit of what he gave to Rigondo and is like, yo, if you don't shape up, if you don't give us a fight, that's it for you. And maybe we'll see Barthelemy. He's not fighting like a really good opponent, so it's possible that he comes
out.
Yeah,
I'm going to talk about this for half a second. Barthelemy,
I don't think you understand how long half a second is.
Top 10, top 15, probably type guy at 135, and that's a hot enough division. People, you know, we're talking about Caleb Plant needing opponents 160 and not being that deep. He's going to get a fight. Someone's going to need an opponent at 135. There's just enough action happening there. So I think, you know, hopefully, this is his chance to show us something a little bit more palatable. So we'll see.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. We will be back next week.